Today's episode of the Sports Talk Garage podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing you with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you're going to get paid when you include an ad from Podgo. We recently joined as a member, and you can too. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co. Now, let's get the episode started.
Welcome to the Sports Talk Garage podcast, where we discuss and debate the latest news and hot takes from the court and the ball fields to the locker room and front office. We are four lifelong friends who grew up with a love of professional and collegiate sports. Today, we are bankers, investors, professors, and entrepreneurs, but our love of sports has never changed. Come listen for the fun, gain some insight, and probably a few laughs as we give you our perspective on those oversized contracts, game-winning scores, and franchise players. This is the Sports Talk Garage.
Sports Talk Garage podcast listeners, this is your host, Matt, along with my normal co-host, David and Mike. Unfortunately, John is taking another week of hiatus. I'm glad to be back, though. Very, very excited for some topics we have tonight as we start Season 3, Episode 9. We've got some great stuff going on, some recent news. We're going to talk a little bit about NHL broadcaster Mike Emmerich, a little bit about World Series, how Deion Sanders is going to survive inside of the coaching world past high school. But before we get going, let's go ahead and drop our warm-up lap. David, Mike, how we doing?
Very good. Happy to be back. Getting closer to full strength with three of us now. We'll be back at four eventually, which is good. But yeah, another week. Nice fall weather here in North Carolina, so no complaints on my end.
Yeah, nice fall weather here too. Only got up to 85 today here in Florida, but it was a nice day. Met my wife over at Disney World for dinner this afternoon, so can't complain too much.
Oh, sounds nice. Like a nice dinner. I ate at home.
Yep, wouldn't argue with that nice, too much.
Cool. So with that, like I said, I'm glad to be back. Had a little bit of a hiatus, has had to go to a wedding that was not in my immediate vicinity. So took a little time to kind of transport around, help with the family, all that kind of stuff. So again, happy to be back. Really excited for the topics we have today. Let's go ahead and drop the green flag. NHL broadcaster Mike Doc Emmerich is set to retire this year. Been with, honestly, with commentating on this for a very, very long time. Honestly, right now, I'm pretty sure Mike has all of his NHL gear on since the Lightning decided to go for a big win. So do you have a little information on him, Mike?
Yeah, Doc Emmerich is, he's a legend. He is the voice that I associate most closely to the NHL. He's been calling the NHL on NBC for the last 15 years, but he's been calling it for other networks. I think he was the Devils play-by-play guy forever. He's covered the Stanley Cup final 22 times, 14 All-Star games, 19 Winter Classics. I mean, he's hockey. He's the guy that talks hockey, and he's just, you know, that like idea of just a comforting voice that you just like to listen to. That's him for me when it comes to watching hockey. He calls the game with such elegance. It's such a unique thing, the way that he can describe the same thing over and over, but differently every time. I remember a couple years ago, there was somebody made a super clip of like 157 different ways that he described somebody clearing the puck out of the zone. And he would use, wow. It's like he was a thesaurus for the most basic things and made them sound interesting. I am thrilled to know that his last game that he called was the Lightning winning the Stanley Cup final. But I'm definitely sad to see that he won't be a part of NHL and NBC or the playoffs next year, because he will definitely be missed.
Yeah, he's 74. He's been doing this 47 years, so he has been in this profession longer than any of us have been alive, which longevity speaks to right there. Yeah, he really is hockey. When you think of audio, you think of him, Doc, and you associate it with hockey. And it's not just regular season games. He's done everything from Olympics, as you said, Stanley Cup Finals. He's in the first broadcaster to be in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, which is really cool. He's won countless awards throughout his time. So I'm glad he's able to retire and go spend some time with family, do a hobby, travel around, whatever he wants to do, and some downtime. I believe he's still going to be working for NBC, just in a lesser capacity, have a little more availability for other things. But yeah, that is quite a resume he has put together over the years.
I have to say, I kind of got excited. I mean, if you look at his history at all, right, he's been around for a long time to the point where a lot of the legends that we heard as kids were around. Gordie Howe was a Red Wing. Bobby Hull was a Blackhawk. Bobby Orr was a Bruin. I mean, these are guys that are just titans of the game, always will be well known for their contributions. But as I was reading about him a little bit on his history, I thought something neat, a little bit closer to home. He actually got his PhD through Bowling Green State University, which isn't too far away from me. And that's where he picked up the name Doc. BGSU is a big hockey school. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that makes a lot of sense, but it was just kind of intriguing because it's in the middle of a cornfield and you don't hear much about them unless you're looking. So anyway, just kind of that was my neat pickup from where he started from. I think it said 71 to 73. That's kind of how he started his career. But, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of like maybe Joe Buck, another one of those guys who,
yeah,
baseball and football, he's in the Hall of Fame. This is the same deal. A guy who has been at the pinnacle of his profession for such a long time, and he's definitely going to be missed by hockey fans. And there's not really a single person who can replace him for what he does. I'm sure collectively a lot of people, you know, take the roles of Stanley Cups and Olympics and other things, but he's at that level where you can't just put the new guy in and he's going to take over and it's going to be the same repetition. And as you said, 157 different ways to describe the same play, yeah, but make it new each time. That's a gift that you can do that.
So did anybody pick up on the book that's coming out? It looks like on October 20th, Tuesday, October 20th, in the title. Please tell me somebody else saw this because I couldn't stop laughing.
How a Kid from Basketball Crazy Indiana Became America's NHL Voice. Catchy title.
But it's just great, right? So you go from Indiana to wherever, and then he ends up somehow at BGSU and calling games and then becomes the NHL. I mean, the history behind how some of these guys get to these places are just amazing. Just goes to show you, like, never quit, chase your dream. Find something, yeah, that you really enjoy, and it'll never be work to you a day in your life.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, we wish, you know, Doc, a lot of great years to come. He's enjoying time with family, and I understand he's going to continue his contributions, just not necessarily in the role that he's in now. So, you know, excited for him. Let's go ahead and move on to the World Series. So did anybody other than Mike kind of have an idea of Tampa Bay making it into this? Like, LA, you know, after last year, I feel like we all kind of looked over and said, this is going to be one of those teams that has a good potential, couple big pickups. But, Mike, just tell me how in the world they got there.
Well, I mean, I first would have to say, did you watch any baseball this year? I mean,
they were top in their league.
Who was the number one seed in the American League? Who had the best record? I think it was Tampa.
That team in Florida.
I mean, look, the thing with Tampa Bay, it's the same thing that happened 12 years ago in 08 when we made the run to the World Series. Tampa Bay has always had a team of guys that you've never heard of. Outside of our small little circle, nobody knows who Peter Fairbanks is. and nobody knows who Joey Wendell is, and nobody knows who Manuel Margot is. We've got it's a whole list. Look at our starting lineup, and outside of, I mean, maybe Blake Snell because he's got a Cy Young. You might have heard of him, but pretty much the rest of that team is guys who were either cast-offs from other teams or guys that we've drafted or traded for when they were in the minors and built them up to what they are now. And I mean, I can understand the idea that it's surprising for a team like this to have bested the Yankees in the playoffs. I think beating the Astros, given the Astros' recent history of success, is kind of surprising. But again, the Astros were not that good this year over the long haul. They were a sub 500 team. So that really, that was a great ALCS. But Houston, I think, overperformed better than they should have, given the number of rookies that they were throwing out there. I think game six, they threw like six pitchers that were all rookies. So anyway, Tampa, they've got two really good aspects. They pitch really well up and down from starters to bullpen. Everybody throws strikes. A lot of guys get ground balls. They're just solid. And they play really good defense. I mean, I know Randy Arozarena got a lot of the highlights for his home runs in the ALCS, but if you watch some of the defense from Adames and Wendell and Kiermaier, they made run-saving plays every single game. And they made very few errors. And if they were errors, they were in-betweener kind of things. They really didn't mess anything up themselves. They didn't shoot themselves in the foot, if you will. So if they can do that, then they might have a chance. Their weakness, obviously, is their offense. They don't score runs as well as most teams, especially not as well as the Dodgers. But you know, the old saying in baseball is that you got pitching, you got defense, and you got hitting. If you can do two out of those three things really well, you got a shot. So
I've got a saying I love too called defense wins championships.
That's true. That is a football saying. but that can very, very easily apply to baseball if you'd like to kind of combine the pitching and the defense. Because really, pitching. I mean, pitching at its core is defense.
That's
right.
That's kind of why I'm going with that strategy. Because
they're
just think about it. If you have a 0-0 game all the way down to the ninth inning and Tampa can knock one for a run, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, assuming whoever's in the top or the bottom, but still,
right.
The point is, you could go all zeros right up to that last inning, make one good set of hits that puts somebody on base, round to third, you know, drop the bat into a bunt or whatever you need to do, guy goes to home, it's over. And that's where that defense wins championships. You don't need a whole lot of offense if you can hold them all down.
That's true. Yeah, there's never been a team that's gotten beaten when they pitch a shutout. That is true. It is impossible.
There you go. But
and I mean,
what do
you know? It's a strategy. It's a good strategy.
But essentially, I mean, we are talking about a David versus Goliath team build.
Yes.
When you look at, just for our listeners here, when you look at what the salaries are for these guys, has anybody seen Moneyball? I mean, I know it's on Netflix right now. I'm not going to get into if anybody's happy or not with Netflix at this time, but has anybody seen the movie?
Yes.
Yeah, so this is a pure Moneyball situation
here. Right.
Yes.
It's the analytics versus just throwing cash away.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of ironic given that Andrew Friedman kind of helped build the Rays and then took the job with the Dodgers. And now he's throwing cash at everybody.
Yeah. I mean, $105.5 million for the Dodgers, second only to the Yankees versus the Rays, who are 27 out of 30. Yet both teams, top of their league, both teams in the World Series. And only for the, I believe it's the fourth or fifth times in the wild card era that both top teams in the league have made it to the World Series. So I think this is really just the Rays have to prove, you know, the small markets can compete who don't have unlimited cash to throw at free agents by using analytics versus the big guys like the Dodgers who are there for the third time in 4 years, I believe.
Well, they also picked up a couple all-stars walking in, but in the offseason, but I'm just going to drop the number real quick. So in the 2020 salary, the Rays are at $28.3 million. That's $28.3 million, while the Dodgers are running at $107.9 million, call it $108 million. Now, the funny thing is, because I mentioned Moneyball, which for a quick drop, people should go watch. It's a great movie. Don't even worry about the A-list of actors. Mm-hmm. The story behind it's amazing. Billy Beane goes out, you know, as a ball player who had all the talent in the world, really, from the way they depict it, should have gone to play college ball and ends up going to the pros and then kind of flattens out. But he ends up being the general manager of the Oakland A's and then decides they're going to do it different because it's a small salary cap team. Now, this is back in 2002. So just so you guys have an idea, the funny thing about this to me is the Tampa Bay Rays were at the bottom of that list at $35 million. So they backtracked to $28.3 and made it to another World Series. So in 2002, they were the lowest cap at $35 million. Again, you know, up to $120 million for the Yankees. As David says, now you've got the L.A. Dodgers walking out here at $108 million. I mean, this is going to be one of the best, I hope, series that we've ever seen. So let's talk about this real quick. What do you guys think for prediction on, you know, game number of games, who's going to win? What are you guys thinking?
Sure. One quick thing to say before that. I think this is going to show that the Rays are very consistent in their approach to building a team. They've had the fifth best record in baseball since 2008, since their last World Series. Huh. So what they're doing, it works. They're not in the World Series every year, but they are constantly at the top of the league in terms of wins. So it's working. As far as predictions, I've gone back and forth between a 5-game series and a 7-game series. And what's weird is there's not really a home team here. They're playing in in this big open field, which it's easy to get runs in, and the Dodgers can hit runs. So the Rays need to keep a low-scoring game to have a chance to win.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to have 7 games. I don't really think a team's just going to power their way through offensively. I think the Rays are going to take it in 7, and the Dodger fans are going to go back home after 7 or 8 straight years of winning and to leave some unsatisfied fans back in LA.
Yep. So before we get to our regional fan here, I'm also going to say 7 games, but you know, I really want to vote for David in this one and the underdog. And I'm going to say, I think it's going to take them the entire run 4-3 Tampa Bay. Mike, for your thoughts, I probably should vote for the Dodgers because I've had a couple really bad picks this year for champions. So just for your luck.
True. Yes, you have. That's true.
But what are you thinking?
Well, I mean, I hate it if we all pick the same thing just because it just feels like it's the easy choice. So I'm going to say – my honest thought is I think it's going to be the Rays in 6. But as a fan, I kind of hope it goes 7 because we have Charlie Morton. And if you watched Game 7 in the ALCS, Charlie Morton now has pitched in 4 winner-take-all games in his career. And he's 4-0. Nobody else has done that. He's when the pressure is on, it's not an opinion. This is just fact. No one is better than him. He has one of the best ERAs in those games, and he's 4-0. John Smoltz, who called the NLCS, he was 2-0 with a .74 ERA, which is solid.
Phenomenal.
But Morton is a playoff beast. And I think, you know, looking at the rotations, you know, I think it's going to be hard for the Rays to beat LA when Walker Buehler starts because he's just tough to hit for everybody. But I think when the Rays start Glasnow and when the Rays start Morton, they're going to be in good shape. Blake Snell is the wild card because you never know which Blake Snell you're going to get. Sometimes he can't throw strikes to save his life, and other times he sits everybody down in order. So depending on what happens with him, it could be a short series, in all honesty, because I think the thing that worries me if I'm a Dodgers fan is Clayton Kershaw, who for his career is one of the best pitchers that we've seen in this generation. But
in the regular season,
everybody knows that when it comes to October, something just doesn't go right for him. And for him, if he can go five innings and give up three runs, that's a good start for him in the postseason. He gets knocked around, it seems like, every time he goes out there. And if I am reading things correctly, they're thinking about sending him out for game two, which also lines him up to pitch probably game six. Those are two games that I'd be worried if I was the Dodgers. Because the Rays, this year during the season, the Rays became the first team pretty much ever to start nine right-hand batters against the lefty. They've got the depth as a right-handed hitting team to try to take advantage of the left-handed pitching Clayton Kershaw and the left-handed Jose Urias, who's probably going to start game four. So I think the Rays have a good shot to do it in six, and if it goes seven, then Charlie Morton's going to take care of things.
Gotcha. All right, so with that, we're going to go ahead and drop the yellow flag, take a quick sponsor break, and let them have a few words, and we will be back to talk a little bit about Mr. Deion Sanders and some college football championship.
How many times while you have been manscaping have you nicked or nearly trimmed off your wiener schnitzel in the twins? Hey, I'm Christy, and with 30 years experience teaching men how to thin out their forest in their yonder region, I am so excited to tell you about this revolutionary Lawn Mower 3.0. The ceramic blades prevent the manscaping accidents that leave you unable to use your most favorite appendage. Oh, and gentlemen, it also keeps a 90-minute charge for those of you that haven't trimmed in quite a while. You'll need every second of that 90 minutes. Let's be real, though. No one, especially your significant other, wants to have to weed through your overgrown forest to find their favorite play toy. So order now at manscaped.com and enter the promo code podcast20 and receive 20% off plus free shipping. Serious, Bushy Man. Order now.
Welcome back, Sports Talk Garage listeners. This is Matt getting ready to start off our second half with Mike and David. We talked a little bit about Doc Emrick, longtime NHL broadcaster in the first half, a little bit about World Series predictions. So we're excited as we move on. Let's talk about Deion Sanders, easily, you know, one of the best NFL players, you know, of his time. Now he's moving for college coaching at the Division I level, but it's going to be at Jackson State, and this is coming off of the highest he's coached so far is high school. I'm sure this has been debated 1,000 ways from Sunday, but guys, is this even a good move? Is this something where we feel confident that he's going to be able to head coach a team coming right out of, you know, having basically coaching high school up to this point?
And so I gotta say, I am shocked that Primetime is going to be a college head coach. I think part of this stems from he was previously at the NFL Network, didn't get his contract renewed, and went to Barstool Sports. I don't think he really wanted to do that, but then this popped up. He's like, yeah, I've coached before. I've played in the NFL. Of course I could be a head coach. So he's going to Jackson State on a four-year deal for a total of $1.2 million, not per year. That's $300,000 a year, which for him, his net worth is about $40 million, so he's definitely not doing this for the money. I think he's doing it for the ego boost, hoping to get a good staff around him. And I was a little confused about the contract. He's not staying there for 4 years. But if you give him anything less, you can't go to a recruit and say, hey, I've got a two-year contract. Come play here. I'm going to be gone in 2 years. I think this is just a stepping stone for him to try to get to a higher level as an offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator at a Power 5 school. Granted, he has all the stats in the world as an NFL player. He was phenomenal in that time, and I'm sure he has the knowledge to impart on these college kids. I'm sure some of his persona will help attract kids who are high school athletes, say, yeah, I want to go play for him. And there's been some talk of some other really big names to come coach for him and kind of get like a retired NFL group of guys, at least two or three of them on his roster, which would be very attractive as a high school student athlete. But I kind of see this partially as a publicity move for himself and not necessarily a guy who's committed to staying at this school for even his entire contract here.
Well, first of all, his, you know, I guess his contract is right around what it should be for an FCS coach, right? Because he's not in the bowl.
It's a fair contract.
In the FCS. So, you know, these guys aren't getting the giant payday that the bigger schools are going to get, you know, and he's got to start from somewhere if he's going to be serious about this. Right. So,
yeah,
I'm having a hard time on where I want to go with this. Cause I, you know, usually when you see a guy like this step in, typically they're going to take a position coach role based on what they played and were very successful at. Cause obviously you have a lot to impart or on the other side of it. Right. So if he goes from wide receiver to corner, you know, the joke, ha ha ha, corners are wide receivers that can't catch. You know, you're playing against these guys, you know how to teach, or you should know how to teach essentially how to stop yourself, I guess, if that's the case. But you're walking into a head coach role. I mean, I don't know if this is something where he's really, I mean, obviously as a big time offensive weapon, he should know how to set up plays and counter a defense and do those types of things. You know, you did walk into an FCS versus an FBS, but, you know, and he doesn't need to grind like a lot of people. As you said, this could be a lot of publicity, but I'm still curious how in the world you walk straight into a head coaching spot other than by name alone.
I think that's it. I mean, he coached high school, and it happens to be the high school that his sons attended. So it's not just a different high school. It probably went to the head coach who's like, hey, my sons are coming here. Can I coach? And like, yeah, you played in the NFL. I know it's Texas, and in Texas, high school football is
a religion.
The big thing. But still, he's Deion Sanders. It's still Deion. So you're going to say, yeah, Deion, you come coach here. That's fine. But that is a huge leap. And there's not many guys who go from an offensive coordinator in high school to a head coaching position at the FCS level. So I think just the name alone is what got him to this. I don't know if he has a personal connection at the school with the athletic director, president, some other high administrator. If he doesn't, it's seriously just the name that got him this role. I would love to see him stay there for a while instead of coming in, getting kids to come and commit, and then bolting the first chance he gets for a better offer.
I think it's going to depend on his son. His son so far is a 3-star recruit with, according to Rivals, 23 scholarship offers. I mean, he's already landed a 3-star recruit. He's got a few others that they're looking at. Again, by name, that can get you into a lot of good positions with the NFL if you need to. And let's be honest, NFL is looking at Division II guys. It's not always Division I FBS, but they're going to get the first look. As of last week, the school reported to a newspaper that they're already basically, their marketing and promotional value has already gone up $19 million since Sanders announced he was coming in. But I don't see him sticking around for 4 years. I think, you know, I don't think his son would stick around for, or would go to that school, other than just his dad's going to put him into starting playing time. And, you know, when you have that kind of connection, that can mean real sacrifice for the actual team. So, you know, I think this is one of those things. He comes in, if he's serious about this, and maybe he's just looking for a career path, I give him 2 years. He bails out, goes to FBS somewhere, lands as a position coach, does that for a while, maybe as an offensive coordinator, if this goes well. But, you know, he's not going to walk into Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, maybe Michigan. Michigan could use a good name head coach because, you know, they had one and he's been – well, yeah, we won't go that far. Am I wrong? Anybody else have a prediction on what's going to happen with this guy?
Well, if anybody's followed Deion Sanders throughout his life, you should know to not try to predict what Deion Sanders is going to do. Because
It's a good
Deion Sanders doesn't know what Deion Sanders is going to do. But I think, I mean, I think the crux of this, of what I'm hearing from both of you is you guys, we're all trying to get at the why, the motivation behind him doing this. What caused him to want to do this? Because he hasn't coached high school football for a while. It's not like he's on this coaching path that he's trying to go up. The coaching path stopped like 6 years ago. So I think, and this is just my opinion, I think that he wants to do this for two reasons. One is that I do think that he has kind of realized that coaching is something that he is potentially passionate about, maybe even good at. He's never given it enough time to really find out if he's good, because that whole prime prep thing where he was the coach, that was a whole big fiasco way beyond the football field.
Yes.
And if you don't know the backstory behind that, you should go read about that, because it's like a television drama that played out for 3 years. But besides the coaching side of it, I think something that you guys touched on is how he got the job is his name. I mean, I think we all can agree to that. Kind of reminds me of when Penny Hardaway got the job coaching Memphis. I mean, that dude, he did nothing for quite a while. Then he started coaching a middle school team in 2011 because like a friend of his got sick, and he parlayed that into getting a high school head coaching job where he won some state championships and then got his way into Memphis. So, but if he wasn't Penny Hardaway, winning a state title at Memphis East High School is not going to get you the head coaching job of the Memphis Tigers. It's because you're Penny Hardaway.
Agreed.
So with that being said, it kind of reminds me, the fact that he has chosen to go coach at Jackson State, an HBCU, reminded me of a while back, I can't remember when this was, it was sometime in the summer, when Thon Maker's younger brother, who was rated as the number 16 basketball recruit by ESPN. He was recruited by Kentucky. He was recruited by Penny Hardaway's Memphis. He was recruited by UCLA. And he chose to commit to go to Howard. And he specifically said that he wanted to begin an HBCU movement that would lead other young Black kids who want to play basketball, who want to further their careers, to choose to go to HBCUs instead of always choosing to go to the Kentuckys and the UCLAs and the Dukes. And I think there's a chance, I don't know, because I don't know Deion, but there's a chance that Deion might see this as the same kind of opportunity to try to raise the profile, not just of Jackson State, but just of HBCUs altogether. Because in all honesty, most of us as college football fans, we don't know a lot about the SWAC or the MEAC. You know, I know a little bit about the MEAC because I live and work near Daytona Beach, where we have Bethune-Cookman. So I hear about the MEAC on a weekly basis when they're playing, but they don't get a lot of recognition nationally. Bringing in a Deion Sanders, and if he gets this coaching staff, some of these names I've seen thrown around, like Warren Sapp coming in to coach the D-line, it's going to raise their profile, and raising Jackson State's profile can help raise other schools in the Southwest Athletic Conference and all these other HBCUs. So I think there's a chance that that might be part of his motivation. But I tend to also agree with both of you that I don't know that he's going to stick around very long, which is going to kind of be counterproductive if that is his goal, you know?
Well, so, I think you make a great point. And we all kind of talked about this before we got started. His coaching staff right now, the only thing listed online is two guys that have been there for a while, an interim offensive coordinator and an interim O-line coach, who I think when I looked at their profiles, found each other back a couple of years ago, and looks like they just kind of connected there and now are at Jackson State together. So, you know, and I have no problem with that. But I think, as you said, Mike, the coaching staff is going to make or break this team. Because, you know, if he does get a Warren Sapp to come in, can you imagine the recruits that will want to show up for that? One of the best defensive linemen to play the game. One of the nastiest. Can you get, like...
I've also heard Terrell Lawton's coming in for wide receiver coach.
Yeah, maybe Terrell Lawton's got to take three steps and quit when they're not going to get the ball. I'm sorry, was that...
I mean, this list, Football Scoop has a list of supposed hires that are supposed to be coming in, and you've got Jason Phillips, who was an NFL wide receiver. You've got Mario Edwards Sr., the father of Mario Edwards, the defensive tackle at Florida State. You've got T.O. There is Dennis Thurman to be the defensive coordinator. He was defensive coordinator for the Jets and the Bills for 4 years. And then Warren Sapp, you know, as it says, the summation of T.O. and Sapp, they have no relevant college coaching experience, but they have busts near Deion Sanders in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Let's be honest. Hey. An 18-year-old kid's going to see that and be like, I want to go play for him. You know? I mean, and if you – they could be good. I'm just going to say that. They could be good.
I mean, that's why I said I give him a couple years, because it's going to have to be – and if he does get all those guys and they make a name for themselves – you know, this is honestly, if they get enough recruits, and I mean, I'm stretching. I am really stretching here. You get the right recruits, you have the right seasons. Now Jackson State wants to move up into the FBS. And if they somehow got that,
sure,
he's either taking the entire crew to make money somewhere else at a big school, or they stick it out. But, you know, again, I still give him about 2 years. The gang starts to spread out a little bit if they're successful, and you start seeing some of these big names go other places, and, you know, Jackson State's right back to where they were.
Yeah. I think it'll be telling if all these guys get hired and things actually get started. What will be telling is whether or not there is a reality TV show camera crew that follows them around.
College Hard Knocks. Yes,
because that will tell you whether or not they're in this for the fame and the notoriety and the look at me again kind of thing, or if it's for real.
A fear that I have is whether these coaches come or not, or he just has another group of guys who are coaching, and those first 2 years are not successful, losing record, things just aren't clicking. He's going to look at his life and be like, I am pouring in 90-100 hours a week for this. I can just get another cushy TV job, not have to spend all week doing this, still be around the game. And he's just going to leave the school kind of back where he got it. So
interesting.
Yeah. I'm very intrigued by this, and I don't know. I hope for the best for the students, for the school, but I'm skeptical at the moment.
You know, and here's just hoping that once these kids start signing on, they get what they need to continue in their career, as long as they're going to try and keep going. So let's go ahead and move on to college football. So, you know, the SEC and the ACC have been playing pretty much the entire time. They've been pushing strong. I think you have to be a fool at this point not to say that Clemson and Alabama are the top two contenders at this time. But with the Big Ten and Pac-12 walking into this, what does this look like? Is it going to be down to Alabama, Clemson? Are there any other runners? The floor is open, guys. What are we thinking?
So I'm going to say right now, it's a very clear picture, especially after that Georgia loss, that it's Alabama-Clemson. That's also with not every team that's playing in the fall currently playing, so the picture could change. I think Notre Dame has a chance, but they have to run the table, which includes beating Clemson. If they can beat Clemson, they could possibly vault themselves into a room, but they are not consistent. They have a pretty tough schedule coming up, so they've got to do everything perfectly. Something that Mike said a couple episodes ago that is resonating with me on this one is, you know, the ACC is 4 or 5 weeks in. Their season is roughly half over with their 10-11 game schedule. Big Ten hasn't even started. They don't start until this coming Saturday. So once the ACC is over, Big Ten is still on TV every week. They're still in everybody's eyes. Playoff committee sees them like, yeah, this is what they're doing currently. I remember what the ACC did. I think Ohio State has a legitimate chance if they run the table. Penn State, possibly. depending how well they do. Those are the only three teams that I could see challenging Georgia, Alabama, or Clemson.
You're not going to give Oregon a run on here?
I don't see a Pac-12 team doing enough with their schedule of only playing other Pac-12 teams. It's not the strongest conference out of what's available that's playing this fall. So,
okay. Mike, do you have anything to add there?
I think I'll be shocked if it's not Clemson, Alabama. I mean, I know Ohio State's got a good shot at it, especially I think what benefits them, and I don't mean to be rude or offensive to any conferences, but the fact that there's no non-conference games really can have a big impact. In some ways, it can be a positive in the sense that, you know, if you're in a weaker conference, you've got an easier shot to run the table. But that also can be a negative when it comes to the committee looking at an Oregon, per se. If you run the table against the Pac-12, what does that equate to in the SEC or the ACC or even the Big Ten? And I don't know. I think the other thing that I think we all know is out there, and we tend to not give it too much credit. Everybody thinks Alabama and Clemson are the two best teams, and you almost, if you're Georgia or you're Ohio State or you're whoever, you have to do something to change that. They don't have to do anything. All Alabama has to do is win out. I mean, if they win out, you don't vault them magically. And same goes for Clemson. I mean, Clemson at least has a tough game November 7th at Notre Dame. That's going to be a tough game. And then in theory, you know, the way that the ACC did things this year, they don't have divisions. They just have one big division, and it's going to be the top two teams that play again in the conference championship. That might end up being Clemson and Notre Dame again. So, you know, they're going to have to beat Notre Dame twice. But looking at Alabama's schedule, I mean, if you're Alabama, if you're Nick Saban, what are you worried about?
Like getting COVID.
The rest of the schedule? I don't.
Their toughest game behind them.
Really, getting like COVID is the biggest opponent that they have. And Nick Saban's already dealt with that personally.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're likely going to have to face Georgia again in the championship. But is that really that scary?
They just manhandled them.
It's just tough for me to envision a scenario where a Big Ten team or a Pac-12 team can get into this. And I know it would make a lot of people unhappy, but I could see a scenario where Clemson maybe loses to Notre Dame in November and then beats them in the ACC championship and gets in with that loss. Just because the other schedules, it's hard for Ohio State to prove a whole lot when all they get Penn State, they get Michigan. The rest of that schedule's not that great.
Fewer games.
Yeah, and I think is a thing that when David and I talked about this, we didn't really factor in that the ACC and the SEC are going to play like 10 or 11 game schedules. The Big Ten only has time to fit in 8. And that's assuming that they don't run into any issues, which we've already seen happen with the Florida LSU game and a Missouri game where the SEC is having to bump things to the end of the year. Mm-hmm. They've got a week where they can bump things to. The Big Ten doesn't. So if, God forbid, if Ohio State or Penn State have COVID issues the week of that game, then what? Then what do you do?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Given all of the factors, I can't pick anybody but Alabama and Clemson. I hate it. I would love to see somebody else. I think we all would. Mm-hmm. But I think Alabama and Clemson have shown that they deserve a shot to do this whole thing again.
I have a feeling that, and I think I talked about this weeks ago, the fact that the Big Ten decided that they were going to be out right away and then they were going to hold off and then now they're in, you know, like you said, there is no there is no room for them to really move back if they're going to hold our normal timeline for the college football championship. I think there's a couple good things going for some of these teams, though. You know, number one, the guys that are starting late are going to be fresh. The downside of that is they're also going to be more injury prone because they haven't been able to do anything for a lot more weeks. And look at the NFL. David said right out of the gate, soft tissue injury. And I laughed because you guys are professional athletes. All you guys should be doing is training year round, even if it's by yourself, you know, but it still doesn't get you ready for the big hits. Okay. But Big Ten is still, no matter what, Big Ten, SEC, and Clemson. I'm not giving the rest of the ACC any notification for football right now. Big Ten, SEC, and Clemson are always in the running for being super competitive as you look at playoff runs. I just don't know how the Big Ten is going to compete. And here's the thing. With flu season coming up, you know, I'm almost kind of wondering what these guys are going to report. Because if they're all locked in, you know, with each other and they have a trace case or whatever, and we've seen false positives, we've seen all these various things come back and forth. I'm curious how they're, if they're even going to report this or try to sneak stuff under the rug. Would you even find out if they buried this till next year? I mean, look at the Dodgers going into this championship. One of their big things was they didn't have any cases. Well, you've been playing through the summer where it's hot. You know, we've been told this thing dies off in the heat. Now you're coming into flu season. I just don't know how the Big Ten, you know, hopefully all the teams can, you know, keep this off having any issues by sickness. But, you know, we're not talking about one guy gets the flu and he's out for a week. You know, basically you have tracing where everybody's out for 2 weeks and that's it. You know, it's going to be hard to play at this level. As you said, Mike, if you have a case of this go through it, you're pretty much done. And now you're playing for backup, which, you know, the sad thing is all these guys that were dying to play, they want this championship run. Again, not Alabama, not Clemson. The guys that are just now getting into this, all of them, all their parents, they wanted this run. They want them to have the game tape, as David said before, for NFL record. But most of them said they were just going to go, if it was a spring thing, they were going to go straight to the draft. Well, now they got it. Question is, can they live through it for the next X amount of weeks? And I, you know, I hope for all teams' sake they can. I just don't see it statistically possible. So do we get something next year that shows that half of the Big Ten was hiding cases and didn't say anything?
You know, though, if that happens, and I would hope nobody would hide cases, but if that did, you know, the NCAA, once they find out, are going to, you know, negate wins. If there's a championship, they're going to remove it and give it to, you know, whoever's second place. We've seen that done plenty of times for much smaller issues, and something like this could be with a health issue.
Yeah, I mean,
so it really boils down to how smart students are with the decisions they make, and then how good, I guess, the medical community and decisions on a specific campus are compared to one of the peer schools.
I have no experience in working at a school like Michigan or Ohio State. I don't know how they do things, but I know if it's anything like the way that my school has run things, it is literally impossible to hide anything. You are not – the football team doesn't test the football team. So – You have these are, I mean, we can get into the argument about whether they're student athletes or athlete students or whatever. At the end of the day, most of these guys still have to go to class. They're going to have to be on campus. And when you're on a college campus right now, I think most colleges do random testing for COVID.
We do.
We call it sentinel testing at our school. But there is testing done at random, you know, instead of testing everybody because that's too expensive. But they'll test at random, and we've got like 430 student athletes. I think they test about 60 of them per week, and we've already had one of our teams get shut down for the rest of the fall because they had a kid test positive. The kid was less than truthful, and then the team was quarantined. And while they were in quarantine, half the team went to a pool party. So they're 18 to 20 year old kids. And I know it's not the same at a D2 school in Florida as it is at Ohio State, but they're still 18 to 20 year old kids. And to expect them to make all the right decisions and minimize their risk at the greatest extent, I think is asking more than they're capable, more than all of them are capable. Some of them, most of them, I think, can handle it. But the problem is if one guy messes up, it affects a bunch of people. Like you said, Matt, you can't just take one guy and have him sit out like you would when he breaks his arm in normal world. You've got to sit out, and I feel like your whole position group's going to have to sit out because you guys are all close together all the time. So yeah, if they do things the way that other schools do things, there will be no hiding. You cannot pretend it doesn't exist and wait until after the championship game to be like, oh, hey, guess what? We had some guys, just kidding. But that being said, FBS football is a different world. And if there's a way, they're going to try to find a way to hide it. I don't see it happening. And I think we all hope that they can get through the season. Nobody likes to see games postponed or canceled because of this. Nobody isn't getting any joy out of that. Even if it is a school that you hate, you don't want to see teams not play.
Still want to play.
So I'd like to see them get through it. And I think for the joy of just argument and for giving us things to talk about, I hope that Ohio State or Penn State or somebody goes undefeated and Clemson goes undefeated and Georgia goes undefeated, not Alabama. Sorry. But Georgia can't go. If Georgia runs the table the rest of the way, if they do the, win every game and then beat Alabama in the championship, and then we've got the one loss Alabama, the one loss Georgia, the undefeated Clemson and the undefeated Big Ten team. And Matt, if you want to throw Oregon in there to go undefeated, sure. Will they get any serious consideration?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm right. That's kind of what I'm aiming at. Oregon's going to be a fun to talk about school. I don't think that they have the depth to make that kind of run. I can be wrong. I kind of hope I am. But I think David named him right up front. If you're going to have any dark horses, if they make it through without any cases, if they can hold off for everything, if, we put all these together, I think your two options that are going to be dark horses are either going to be Ohio State or Penn State. Oh, for the love of God. Notre Dame is like the number one love to destroy themselves at the wrong moment team.
That's why it's a dark horse.
They do. They really do. That,
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Just saying. That's why it's a dark horse. They have to do everything perfect.
Dude, the dark horse is a long shot. So Notre Dame is like a constant companion of pain. Like, even the years where they have amazing seasons, they always trip at the wire somehow. And then you see like three teams go running past them and they can't recover. It just, there's a lot of Notre Dame fans up here. I'm about 3 hours away. A lot of folks will drive over to Notre Dame games and in a normal year, and lots of Notre Dame paraphernalia all over this type of area. But it's still Notre Dame football and they still struggle. This isn't, the yesteryear of Rudy and years where they've made that run. So I think your black horse pick was
Rudy offsides?
I'm trying to think of a good word that doesn't sound completely derogatory to any fans we have for Notre Dame. Hold your banner high, guys. Go Irish. You're green. You guys need luck. Okay. Anything to add, David? I know you're not happy with me right now. Oh, I'm all about that. Anything that beats Clemson after last year, I'm happy about.
End of story.
All right. So with that, let's go ahead and drop the checkered flag. I thought that was a really good session for us. If anybody is, I think if anybody is interested in anything we've talked about, please make sure that you're reaching out to us. We'd love to hear from you. But just, for quick final thoughts, I'm pretty excited about what we have coming up here. I think, you know, this has been the year of when we got sports, we got sports. So, you know, as we kind of wind toward the end of the year and see what's going to happen, I'm really excited for football right now. We've had a lot of craziness. We haven't seen a lot of cases outside of the Tennessee Titans that, you know, decide to do the same thing as your 19 and 20 year olds down in Florida. But, you know, aside from that, you know, it's just an exciting year. I may actually turn on some baseball this year, and I don't do that very often. I'm ready for David to go hit Goliath up with that slingshot once or twice.
Yeah. World Series starts tomorrow night, Tuesday night, game one. I'm sure I will have a TV on watching it. Maybe not paying.
Oh, no, you have to watch every single Tampa pitch.
But the game will be on. I'll be
remember, defense wins championships.
Yeah, don't watch when the Rays are hitting. Don't watch; it's not pretty. Unless it's a Rosarena, just go ahead and flip over to The Voice or whatever other shows are on. I mean, watch Big Brother. Big Brother's good entertainment. I'll plug Big Brother.
Mike, we need to have a serious conversation about your entertainment choices.
CBS show. What else?
Hey,
teach your own.
You know what? On a different note, I played disc golf this weekend for the first time in about 3.5 years with my brother-in-law. It was a lot of fun. My shoulder's a little sore. I haven't thrown a disc that hard. We played 3 rounds, and should probably have done 2, but it was fun.
So next thing you know, David's pushing around the little shopping cart looking thing with like 50 discs in there that he only uses 3 of.
Oh, well, he's in a league. He has a backpack with 18 discs. And I was like, wow, I have 3. That's okay. Thanks. He's really into it.
Yeah. It was still fun. I think I still have a few disc golf discs somewhere in the garage. I'm really not sure why my dad thought that would be a fun thing to do. About, I don't know, 7, 8 years ago, shortly after I moved over to Daytona, he came over here and he bought this thing off eBay or Amazon or whatever. Brings it over and he's like, "Hey, let's go. The school you work at has a disc golf course on campus." And I was like, "It's news to me, but okay." And we go over there and we do this, and I swear to you, it was 102 degrees outside, and it was miserable from the beginning until the end. And I mean, I apologize if you think disc golf is fun, but I will never do that again. That was just a terrible way to introduce a sport to somebody. I mean, it's like if you try to get somebody excited about
a better time.
Football and show them like a 3-0 game in the rain. Like, no, that's not that was not a good introduction. It was
bad first impression there. So we had about 60 degrees in the woods for most of it. Beautiful shade and a nice breeze. So weather, it was fine. Not many people out, which was also nice. We got to go through the course at our pace. We'll have to try again at some point.
I don't remember what 60 degrees feels like, to be I'll perfectly honest with you.
Come on up, man.
We've finally gotten our lows into the 60s. We had a streak of 128 straight days where we did not see a temperature below 70. And it sounds nice to those of you that have to deal with the snow, but I tell you what, it gets old real quick in the summertime. But I as far as my thoughts for the week, I'm gonna be watching baseball. That probably surprises you guys, but I'm gonna be watching the Tampa Bay Rays, and I'll watch every pitch on behalf of both of you, just in case you guys don't. I will be frankly living and dying with every pitch. So I'm happy about that. I know a lot of people don't necessarily love him.
Yeah.
My coworker despises him with a passion. Jeez. and he has shown me proof that there are many, many others like him. But I I don't get it. I don't see the reason to dislike him. I think he does a fantastic job with both baseball and football.
No.
He just everybody mm-hmm. I see people complain about his bias and I don't see it. I think he calls a very fair game. He seems to enjoy both sports equally and call both sports with a nice rhythm and a nice passion without getting one sided or the other. So yeah, I'm gonna enjoy Joe Buck. I'm gonna enjoy John Smoltz and listening to what they have to say. Mm-hmm. And hopefully it will involve some wins for the Rays. Maybe by the next time we're talking, we'll have a World Series trophy to go along with the Stanley Cup over there in Tampa. Well,
Mike's going to have 18 Tampa shirts and hats on next week.
If the Rays get four more wins, and then if we fast forward a few months and Tom Brady brings the Super Bowl, we're gonna.
No,
I mean,
don't start that now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you not see the game?
You mean
yesterday?
The Patriots, the Southern Patriots, finally all connected with each other again?
Did you see yep. Aaron Rodgers get embarrassed? It was.
You don't have to talk about that one. He had 100 yards passing right out of the gate, and then I look at my fantasy league, and now he's thrown two picks because he went from I think 4 points in my league straight down to zero. In a heartbeat. Great.
Do you lose extra points if they run the pick back for a touchdown? Because that well, you got lucky on the second one because he got tackled with the two. Otherwise, you would have back to back pick sixes.
No, nope.
It was not a good showing. But we'll save the talk about the Bucks and their Super Bowl run till January.
Fair enough.
Just know that I'm going to need a raise so I can help pay for all this championship gear that. That everybody keeps pushing on me. I got people texting me, "Hey, do you want to get this hat? You should get this shirt." Like, come on. I'm used to winning a championship every 10 years, not
I'm used to free samples. If you want me to have one, send me a sample.
Hey, there you go.
So,
be more than happy to take care of that for you. So,
good plug on the show.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, as we go into our next episode, we're expecting Mike to give us entire rundowns of the whole series with the Tampa Bay championship for the first time ever. And LA loses again and then tries to rebuild one more time and potentially get it. So on that note, we'll go ahead and sign out for the night.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to have your sports-related question or comment featured on the show, please email us at sportstalkgarage@gmail.com. Also, if you want to keep up to date with us outside of the show, please follow us on Twitter at sportsgaragepod. If you enjoyed the show, please drop us a 5-star review and subscribe if you want to hear more. So for Chris back in the studio, David and Matt, I'm John, and we are the Sports Talk Garage.